Hey guys, John here. I have a couple quick notes for today's podcast. Today's episode, we actually recorded a couple months ago. It ran a little long, so we ended up having to split it up into two parts. The first part you're going to listen to today, the first part we discussed Jean-Claude Van Damme and all the movies he's been in. Yeah, it was a really fun discussion, actually. The second part was basically all of us casting our own Street Fighter movies. You'll listen to that one someday in the future. But in the meantime, enjoy today's podcast. Oh, also, at the end of the podcast, I say we're going to cut the commercial. We're not really cutting the commercial. The podcast just ends. So just disregard that. Anyway, enjoy the podcast, and I'll see you next time. Today's sponsor is Audible.com, who has more than 180,000 audiobooks and spoken word audio products. Get a free audiobook of your choice at www.audibletrial.com/shark. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Movies, Films, and Flicks Podcast. I'm your host, John Lossow. Joining me, as always, are my wonderful co-hosts, Mark Hoffmeyer.
Today I learned that John Woo's first choice for Hard Target was Kurt Russell.
No way.
Yep.
So why didn't he go with him?
I mean, I think Kurt Russell's probably like doing something. I don't know. I'll have to look at the time frame. But yeah. So they made Hard Target in 93. So he might have been hard at work for Stargate right around there, some about that time. But Jean-Claude Van Damme had the girl mullet, and
Van Damme's mini mullet was nothing to Kurt Russell's like natural long shag.
I think if Kurt Russell would have been Chance Boudreau at Hard Target, I don't think that there would have been the snake punching out scene.
I don't think that he would have had the last name Boudreaux, because you can't have a jaw like that with a French last name.
Yeah, and so but I don't think he would have caught that rattlesnake, slapped it in the head, knocked it unconscious, and then bit the tail off. So, I'm kind of glad that Russell went and did Stargate instead.
Yeah, I guess we'll never know.
Stargate was way better than Hard Target.
Yeah.
I don't know, Levengood, it's kind of a close call. And my other co-host, John Levengood. Say hi to everyone.
How's it going, folks? So in the spirit of action movies, like our last podcast was all action, I've been looking up a lot of stuff, a lot of movie news. And can you believe the nerve? Like, I have such a man crush on Ryan Reynolds, okay? He can pretty much do no wrong to me. But the people marketing his new Deadpool movie are saying it's the first hard R superhero movie, as if Punisher Warzone never came out.
Yeah, what? They don't even get harder R-rated than Punisher Warzone. Like, Punisher Warzone is like Uber. It must be Uber R. Maybe there's like a new level. There's like somewhat R, really R, hard R, and then Uber R. And that's where, like, Punisher Warzone is.
I have a feeling that if Punisher Warzone was just a flat R, then whatever we get from this hard R Deadpool is going to feel like PG-13.
Yeah.
So what's like a rolling R? Is it like an R-rated movie in Spanish? I can never do it.
Or a pirate movie?
R. I would kill to see an R-rated pirate movie.
Has there ever been an R? I don't remember a R-rated pirate movie.
Well,
I don't think so. I mean, there's that TV show Black Sails. That's pretty cool.
Yeah,
and that's about it, though.
If that was rated, if that had a rating, it would be R.
Right.
R.
So digressing really quickly, do you guys think Deadpool will live up to expectations?
No.
No.
Oh, that's rough. I'm hopeful.
I don't know. It's just Ryan Reynolds, like, he's perfect for that role, but a lot of times when, like, someone's perfect for something, it never works out the way, like, you want it to. I don't know. I'm just trying to, like, moderate my expectations here.
I mean, they're saying all the right things, you know. I think it's been in the pipeline for a very long time.
Right.
I mean, I guess just because it's happening, I think Deadpool fans are some of the hardcore fans that you can, like, they're like Boondock Saint fans. And, like, if you mess up Deadpool, if there's anything that they don't like about it, they're going to ride that. They're going to be so mad about that movie. So it's going to be under the microscope, under another R-rated microscope. And, you know, we'll see what happens.
Right, right. All right. Well, I think it's time to start out the podcast in our usual manner. Mark, I think you have listener questions this week.
I do. And our first listener question is from Movies, Films, and Flicks All-Star, VJ. So VJ, if you guys have been reading the site for some time, has written some of the funniest, weirdest posts that you'll ever read, ever.
Didn't VJ post a video on Facebook where he was, like, spinning a basketball on his finger and had, like, there was, like, a song playing in the background. It was, like Lucero or something. It was very, yeah. It was very weird. I just remember watching it on Facebook. I'm just, like, I kept replaying it. I don't know why.
It was entrancing. And then he also has, like, videos up where he's playing drums and, like, he plays in a band, so he's playing the drums. He's making out with, you know, sorority girls, right, while he's playing the drums and hitting every beat. Oh, and
go VJ.
Yeah, and, like, VJ, I remember he was a greeter at my wedding, and he was really drunk outside his hotel room one night. And
who was it?
He goes, "Hey guys, watch." And he takes a beer and he dumps it all out over the carpet. And then I don't know what this carpet was. It was like a black hole, but it took all the liquid and just like sucked it all up. And then the floor looked completely dry. Yeah. And he goes, "See?" the guy's a prophet. I gotta say. So
it's like the hotel knew, like, the guests would be spilling alcohol all over the carpet or something.
Like, yeah. I mean, the carpet just went, but then, like, I think he just got lucky and he went, "See?" And then, yeah, so,
you think he had a response ready for, like, for when it didn't, like, suck up the alcohol? I'm like, "Look, look at the mess I made."
Oops. He probably, yeah. So, that's our VJ.
If he was such a prophet, he wouldn't have spilled it. He would have saw it coming.
That's right. I mean, he called his shot. So, but this question is from him here, and it's, are all the doors in JCVD's house breakaway so he can roundhouse kick his way from room to room?
Yes.
And so here's my theory.
Oh, God.
All right. So,
wait, did you hear John? John just said, "Yes." Oh, God. When you said, "Here's your theory," like, he was dreading what cockamamie, like, malarkey you were about to say.
I just said yes. I'm like,
slightly answered.
Okay.
Here we go. All right, so in the beginning days, I would say that yes. So, you know, that was kind of his thing. So everyone's like, "Let's go to JCVD's house and watch him roundhouse kick his way through his house." But they were like balsa wood, you know what I mean? Like really cheap doors. But then as he started getting richer and richer around the Double Impact, Universal Soldier, Hard Target days, he had oak. And he had one person at each door standing there waiting to replace those doors when he kicked them in. So that means if he just felt like doing like two rounds around the house, he would have doors. Because when he was poor, he couldn't replace them. It was just kind of SOL for a few days. Mm-hmm. But then as time went on, you know, and he turned down his $12.5 million per picture and he started doing direct-to-DVDs, he went back to balsa wood until he pulled his groin, and then he just went to normal doors. But now when he gets drunk occasionally, he'll kick them in.
Right.
He's so flexible. I feel like he'd have to do more than 180 degrees to pull his groin.
I mean, no, he probably tried like a 720.
Yeah.
And like... in a hallway, which is even more difficult. Like, if you have some open space, maybe you could do the 720. You know, Tony Hawk can't do that, like, in a hallway. You know, he needed a whole ramp to do it.
Yeah.
So JCVD, like, in his hubris, and, you know, he probably had a lot of Belgian beer in him. yeah, so he did it. He made it. He got through, you know, probably 360. He caught his foot on the door banister on the other door, and his groin just went...
I'd like to think that this house doesn't have breakaway doors, because Van Damme, you know, he's not super huge. He weighs like, back in the day, he weighed like 180 pounds when he was releasing his early movies. You know, he was a bodybuilder. He was like 5'10", 5'11". But he's a strong guy, right? Really thick legs. And he was given, like, when he would do his kicks, he didn't make things look easy. He always had a big wind up, and his hands would be all over the place, like he wasn't defending himself. And he'd have the biggest, longest like a white Bruce Lee after it. So I mean, I think he was just putting everything he had into it, like old man strong, even back when he was only in his 20s, and that they're real doors, and that he's knocking down some real, like you know, brick shithouse doors.
Yeah, and I guess that could be true, because I was watching Kickboxer in preparation for this thing, and when he's in the when he's drunk dancing, and when he kicked those guys, I feel like he killed them. Like,
I know his windup was like, so big.
Like, I don't think he likes to do stunts in America because he says everyone's like wimpy. Like he hit knocked the guy's eye out in Cyborg. So when I watched those kicks of his, like I was like, he killed that guy. So I think he probably could take out doors, but I think they're expensive. And so I think in his heyday he had real doors, but then when he got broke again, he went back to balsa wood.
Yeah.
Every time Van Damme throws the most trivial kick, he puts more into it than the last kick in like a Thai strength contest.
Yeah.
Like he puts so much, I'm not surprised he's popping heads eyes out of people's head.
Yeah. I just
and he's so crazy too. When you see his face after he throws those kicks, you'd think someone was about to knock the eyeballs out of his head.
Yeah.
I just want to imagine a scenario where one of his close friends decides to pull a prank on JCVD and just replaces his front door with one of those revolving doors. And it's really durable. Every time he tries to roundhouse it, it just spins. And so he keeps roundhousing it, and it just spins faster and faster. And he's never able to get into his house. Like the door just like he just keeps kicking it. And like, he just doesn't understand why. Like, why won't it go down?
The house just flies. It breaks off the structure and just flies away like a paddle.
Like a propeller. It's propelled.
Yeah, like those paddle, you know, those things on the rivers that had the big paddles, but it flies away in the air.
It's like, oh, I need to get in. I need to use the bathroom.
Like, you know, when like you, yeah, exactly. Like the Tilt-A-Whirl when you sit inside and he stuck his, one day he tricked his buddy who put the door in and he got him caught in that.
Yeah.
And he split his buddy for about a half hour.
If the power ever goes out in the city, just hook up a generator to the Van Damme's revolving door. He could do it. He could probably like power a city for a week.
I mean, yeah, you know what? He did that splits on those trucks. That should be the next thing. Just Jean-Claude Van Damme, you know, giving Bruges electricity for 2 weeks by spin kicks.
Yeah. That was in the deleted scenes of in Bruges.
what was that ad for though? That truck ad, was that a Volvo trucks?
Yeah, I think it was either that or Mercedes-Benz, but I think it was Volvo.
That was such a cool ad when he slowly was doing that straddle. And I remember reading about that. They're like, no, he really did that. I'm like, nonsense. He didn't really do that. And I'm reading everywhere. Yeah, he really did that. Those trucks really did that.
Oh.
Yeah.
He's still got it.
I would be so nervous to be one of the drivers. I'm like, all right, just drive straight. Don't veer too far, of course.
Because if I screw this up and he pulls a groin muscle, he's going to pop one of my eyeballs out of my head with a roundhouse kick.
Like, he's going to pull a groin, and he's never going to be able to put it back in.
Yeah.
Like, that's how bad it's going to be.
Yeah, so right. I think that's our slightly answer to that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, you know what? VJ must be a prophet, because when I heard that question, I never would have thought such beautiful answers would come out of it. But he was clearly leading us the way.
Oh, yeah. He knows.
Yeah.
And then
he's pouring one out over the carpet right now.
That's just disappearing. And then also during the wedding, like, I'm not quite sure what happened, but like Megan and the bridesmaids were getting off of the elevator. And I think Vijay was thinking it was like some random ladies. But then when he saw it was Megan, like, you know, he was like, you know, he's good friends with her. So he goes, oh, Megan, you're the worst.
On her wedding day?
It was like the night of the rehearsal dinner. And because he thought that you guys went out with him. The last text I got from you, Lazabeth, was Jay's peeing in the tree. And
oh, yeah.
But that's the only text I got the night before my wedding. Well, after Megan and I text each other, but your text late at night saying Jay was peeing in a tree outside of the hotel. But yeah, so he, you know, they weren't, he realized they weren't anybody that he could like hit on. So he goes, you're the worst.
That's epic.
And then our next one was actually from another guy who was at the wedding, the lumberjack himself, Jeremy Moore, my cousin. And he asked, what made JCVD stand out from his cohorts? And would CGI have helped or hurt him? And so this is kind of what I'm thinking about JCVD is I was watching Bloodsport. And there's a scene in Bloodsport where he, for some reason, sees the bad guy digging stuff from his pants.
Wait, what? Like, what was he digging out of his pants?
Well, Bolo Young has like this secret little pouch of powder that he keeps inside his pants. And, I'm telling you, it takes like 60 seconds for him to dig out. The ref is watching it. The referees who do nothing in Bloodsport are watching it. Jean-Claude Van Damme is watching it. So he walks up and he gets, you know, powdered in the face. Like, he basically gets antiqued.
I remember this scene. So Bolo Young, he pulls out like a whole pill and he like takes his sweet time just crumpling it up in his hands.
Yeah, and then like he crumples it up. Everyone waits around and then JCVD allows himself to get hit perfectly. But like Van Damme, he like showed a lot of like he was like vulnerable in it. Like, he kind of had like, he was like Paul Walker at its best. When Paul Walker's at his best, when he's like scared shitless and like kind of vulnerable. And I really liked that scene. And I also think that, you know, so he could be vulnerable. And I also think that he was just really good at doing the splits. I mean, you watch every movie he's in, he does the splits. Like, he does the splits, he punches people in balls, he does naked splits in Time Cop. Like, he's splitting everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, man, So I think between the vulnerability and the splits, that's where he stuck out. And then I think he would have been hurt by CGI. Like, most of his stuff depended on, you know, spin kicks and splits and, you know, butt shots. That I don't think that like CGI could have aided any of that, unless he was like spin kicking dinosaurs, which I'm all for.
Right.
But so I mean, but you know, I saw a movie with Dolph Lundgren fighting a giant monitor lizard, and that was really lame. So I mean,
oh man, who won?
Yeah, he got eaten. He was the bad guy.
Oh no.
So yeah, exactly. And I think Scott Atkins was the good guy. But it's like, yeah.
What if, you know, they do all those sci-fi movies of the week, like Anaconda versus Megashark, and then it's Sharktopus versus Croc-a-Wolf, and then it, you know, they make all these crosses with the sharks and the octopuses and all this stuff. What if the Sci-Fi Channel actually recognized Dolph Lundgren as a movie monster and they started mixing other things with him? So it would be Sharktopus versus Dolphosaurus.
Dude, that would be perfect, because, you know, back in the day, Dolph used to box and like use his arms, but nowadays he's all front kick. So if he was like a Dolph Lundgren T-Rex hybrid, like, he doesn't really need his arms. He would just be throwing the scariest front kicks in the history of the planet.
Are you guys like ignoring the obvious crossover with an animal you can make? Dolph Lundgren, the dolphin. Dolphin Lundgren.
So dumb. I would not watch that.
Dolphin Lundgren.
Dolphin Lundgren.
It's terrible.
It's like some horrible, like straight to DVD ripoff of Aquaman.
Or a sci-fi movie. That's what it sounds like.
Dolphins are very smart, and Dolph Lundgren does have his master's in chemical engineering, and he was on an MIT Fulbright scholarship. So dolphins are smart. He's smart. Like, he could be he could be beating up sharks. Yeah. He could be like, you know, the head of Dolph with the body of a dolphin.
I wanted to ask, like, how many dolphins have a master's degree in chemical engineering?
Yeah, I mean, imagine Dolph with his smarts with a dolphin's like echolocation and like the cool flips that they can do. Oh man, he'd be unstoppable. Yeah. And his hair would stay perfectly gelled throughout the water.
I just want to imagine a dolphin with Dolph's chiseled jawline. Like, I wonder what that look.
So what would a Jean-Claude Van Damme monster be? Let's see.
Something deadly, but also that can split.
No. It's Jean-Claude, C-L-A-W-E-D.
Yes, Jean-Claude.
Oh.
Van Ram. Jean-Claude Van Ram. Just like, he has horns on his head.
What if he's like a grizzly bear, but that can also do splits?
Like a really small grizzly bear.
like he's rampaging towards you, and all of a sudden, like at the last second, he just does a split and just like claws you. Like in the crotch.
More of a honey badger, really.
Yeah.
It's okay, darling. We're safe in this tree. Then all of a sudden, this stupid bear does this massive, huge spin kick and kicks you out of it.
I want to know who's saying darling up in that tree.
No wonder they're being hunted.
It's a, yeah, I love it. So Jean-Claude Van Beaver.
This makes sense. wait. So what? So Van Damme.
What makes him like? What makes him stand out? from everybody else.
You know what you said. I was actually thinking something really similar, and that's that. So he has two things that I feel like most action stars don't have. One, he's naturally very charming and good looking, without putting him in snazzy clothes and without giving him super brilliant one-liners. You know, like, he has this cute little head twitch gesture that women like. He's got that little half smile. He's like the best looking clean cut action star ever. You know, when he's like fresh shaven and everything, like, he's a woman's dream. He's always wearing black silk underwear and all these like nice clothes. Like in his show, in his movies, you always see him in his underwear. Like,
how do you know he's always wearing black silk underwear?
Because in Double Impact, his twin even makes fun of him for always wearing black silk underwear.
Okay. Like, and that is true though. In every Van Damme movie, like that we're gonna go through, there's always women just throwing themselves at him.
And so,
like,
the thing is, though, is that he's so smooth, right? And he's got the great smile and everything, and he dresses nicely. And, like, guys like Sly and all them, like, they have these sex scenes that are fueled by post-action adrenaline. Van Damme has date night with the woman and then has, like, a romantic waking up with, like, this cute, like, oh, it was really nice last night and everything. Whereas, like, when Schwarzenegger, well, he almost never had a sex scene, it seems, but like a Sly or someone, they wake up, they're like, I gotta go kill something. Like, the moment they wake up, they get out of bed. And Van Damme, he's gonna sit around and snuggle and get them breakfast in bed. So he's got that. And the other thing is that he never starts out as the tough guy. We always see something in his past that shows that he wasn't tough at some point. Or we see him building through the whole movie just to become capable. You know, like he's the guy who's not running into this shit thinking, I'm gonna kill 89 guys in a row. He's the guy who's training because he needs to train, not training for the sake of training like a Rocky movie.
Yeah. Oh no, yeah, I guess that, and you know, Bloodsport, he learned to kind of, you know, he was a troubled youth and he learned to kind of become tough. And then he had to stick up for Donald Gibb against Bolo Young, and then Kickboxers, his mulleted brother got destroyed by Tung Pao, and
he didn't even know how to fight in the beginning of Kickboxer. He was just in great shape.
And then we had to witness 15 minutes of him being pulled into splits.
Right, and even in like Cyborg, so we're covering his three like oldest movies, but even in Cyborg, even though when we first see him, he's like total badass to the max. When we see his backstory, it's like these land pirates that he was chasing around, like, they just totally manhandled him and his family and, like, killed his girlfriend and her daughter or his daughter or his family or whatever it was that got killed.
That was a brutal death.
But the thing is, like, you always see him at some point, like, not being tough. Or, like, in Lionheart, he comes and he fights after he, like, runs from the French Foreign Legion or something. But he's not coming in as a great fighter. He has a really tough time getting into it. And he's always getting his butt whooped like Rocky in, like, every single one of these fights almost.
Yeah. I do think that he's mastered the use of the nutshot and people like that. So, like, in Bloodsport. And then Lionheart?
The first in Lionheart, he kicks the Scotsman under the kilt.
And then the parking garage where they're fighting in a parking garage, the guy throws a high kick, Jean-Claude, like, splits and punches the dude right in the nuts.
I think he turned it into a grab afterwards, too, because it almost looked like twisting a dagger, but with his wrist.
So, like, you know, and then, like, Ebert had this to say. He said, Van Damme, who is Belgian and unlike many of his countrymen, can speak English virtually without an accent, has more conventional good looks than most of his competitors, projects less inner complexity, and seems thoroughly comfortable with his feet above his head, a position many martial arts experts often find themselves in.
Whoa! Did Ebert say that he could speak English without a French accent?
I guess compared to, like, you know, Schwarzenegger's at the time. And, I mean, you could barely hear what Steven Seagal said, because Steven Seagal was always like, he was American, but he goes, yes, he sounded like the guy from The Water Boy for some reason. And then Sylvester Stallone was always like, hey, when I turn my head on backwards, it's going, it's more
American. It's not cool to make fun of people with learning disabilities, Mark.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, so, I mean, even with his accent, he was more understandable than, you know, the other action stars at the time.
Yeah, well, I wasn't exactly buying that he was ever from Detroit, though. Well, hold on. If you look at his filmography, most, like, half of the characters he's ever played have a last name that could be, like, French or Belgian.
Oh, yeah. Like, you know, Chance Boudreau. And then in Death Warrant, there's a line. They're like, "This is L.A., not Canada."
You can't. Because he was from Quebec. In that.
And then people were like, "You can't get away with whatever you want here." It's like, man, what's going on in Quebec?
What kind of lawless Mad Max land is Canada turned into?
Lazarus, why do you think that he is, more approachable than many action stars?
I'm just going to list three things. One, hair gel. Two, accent. Three, splits. He has the trifecta, exclusive only to JCVD.
That sounds like Vidal Sassoon, but JCVD Saloon. You walk in,
yeah.
You come back out with a mullet and a lot of hair gel.
Yeah. I think he's the only person I know who put hair gel in his mullet. it's just totally unnecessary, but he does it, and it looks good.
Yeah, and Hard Target, his mullet was something to behold. But also, he was smaller than a lot of the guys, too. I don't know if that made him more relatable.
He was I think that he was, again, at the beginning of his career, 5'10 or 5'11 and about 180.
Yeah. And he didn't seem very self-conscious, too, the drunk dance scene. And, the first movie, I don't know if let me IMDb it. But his first screen credit is a movie called...
Oh, it's called Breakin'.
What, is it Breakin'?
Oh, I think it's Breakin' from 1986 or 1988.
It's called Monaco Forever.
Oh, and, I thought it was Breakin'.
Yeah, and he's titled as Gay Karate Man. And he's driving in this fancy convertible. He picks up this guy and he starts hitting on this guy, Jean-Claude Van Damme. Jean-Claude Van Damme grabs his crotch and the guy's like, "Hey, let's take this outside and let's fight." And then so Jean-Claude Van Damme throws a ton of kicks and the guy runs away. And then Jean-Claude Van Damme walks away all sassy back to his convertible. So I don't know, maybe there's a lack of self-consciousness to his characters as well. He was willing to do the clap dance, the drunk clap dance in Kickboxer. He relies really heavily on the clap, by the way. But so I think maybe that's...
He reenacted that scene on, I don't remember if it was Conan O'Brien or Kimmel or something, but, in the last couple years, he reenacted that scene, and it was glorious.
Yeah, his claps are Yeah, and no, he wasn't Breakin' in 1984 as a background dancer. Then he was a soldier in Missing in Action, and then he was in Monaco Forever as so maybe his first line was as the guy in Monaco Forever.
So what's funny is,
I saw Breakin' in the last year, and if you remember the pool fight scene in Lionheart, where he's wearing that one piece black that little butt snuggie thing, so he was wearing the exact same thing and Breakin'. But what's funny is that when he's wearing that, everyone's crowding around watching people in a little dance battle. Everyone else is wearing shorts and roller skates and t-shirts and butt packs, and he's there wearing that bathing suit, and he has no lines. He's just watching. I'm just thinking, where did you come from, dude?
Wait, and Jason Statham, before he was a big actor, he was a go-go dancer in a music video.
I saw that on Facebook. So I could not contain myself.
So I feel like before you got to be a big action star, you got to be a backup dancer in something.
Or a sassy gay karate expert.
That's right. So, you got to be breaking. You got to be background dancing. I think that's where it's a good place to get your start.
You know, I got to say, Mark, contrary to a lot of our last podcasts where in our episodes we would what was it? Partially answer? Slightly answer?
Yeah. Slightly answer.
Or slightly answer thing? I think that we answered the hell out of this.
I think we overly answered it.
Yeah.
we thoroughly answered it.
We're the kid who cheats on a report and plagiarizes something so precise, so exactly from the original source. They're like, "Did you invent this? I don't believe you wrote this." It's like we went too far with our answer.
I did my research on Wikipedia. It's legit. Yeah.
So yeah, thank you so much, VJ and Jeremy. You guys, they listen to the pods all the time. Great listeners. So thank you so much for your questions.
Yes, thank you once again for those wonderful questions, and they provide a great segue to our first topic of the day. Lemongood, I'll let you take it from here.
All right. So, in case the theme has not yet been realized,
we're
talking
gel.
A lot about Jean-Claude Van Damme here. What do you got, John?
It's
what are
hair
you going to heckle me with?
Hair gel is the theme of today.
Hair gel is the theme today. But so our last episode, we kind of had this little action-packed. episode, and today I wanted to just kind of to snowball that into this avalanche of Jean-Claude Van Damme that I want to call Van Damme Mania. And I don't know, for me, Van Damme, he really got me started. Like, when he started his real movie career in 1988, I was 7 years old. I was already taking martial arts. When he stopped his first decade, I was about 17 years old when his last big movies were coming out in theaters. And that was when I started lifting weights while I was doing martial arts. So he was really, he was my action star. Like, I wasn't the bodybuilding Arnold Schwarzenegger. I wasn't some little word-slurring Sylvester Stallone. I wanted to be a Van Damme. And so today I wanted us to talk loads and loads about Van Damme. And I think specifically I wanted us to focus on his first 10 years of movies, all of his highlights, because those first 10 years, starting in his first starring role anyway in 1988, those were his theatrical release years. Those were when he was associated with action movies, whereas now he's associated with some with having used to be in action movies. Yeah. And bankruptcy. Poor guy. And I think a cocaine problem.
Oh, no. Yeah. He had a big one during Street Fighter. Like, they said he was out of his mind.
But yeah, so I wanted to talk about his first 10 years. And you know what? I mean, he was right there with the training montages, although his were different. His training montages, like we said earlier, he was usually going from nothing to something instead of like Rocky, where he was going from great to greatest. So I thought it was interesting. He had a lot of humility. We saw his characters develop a lot. He panics a lot. He gets freaked out, and he puts everything he has into a lot of his swings when it's the beginning of the fight, not just the end of the fight. I mean, he has his smooth moments, but I think that he was, as we said before, he was a unique action star. And so I thought that we'd go through his first 10 years of movies and say what we loved the most about him, what we remembered the most, what was the silliest, what was the best, what was the most ball-crunching.
That's every movie, then.
I think we've covered his ball-crunching moments pretty well. Like, it's pretty much the sumo wrestler in Bloodsport and then that poor Scottish guy. Wait, why is the Scottish guy in this underground street fight anyway?
Yeah, but why is he the poor Scottish guy? Like, there's no rules, man. Like, if he was just standing on the street and he got hit,
dude, anybody who gets punched in the balls and then has the fist twisted against their balls is a poor guy. I don't care what he did. That twist at the end, that was unwarranted, Van Damme.
Yeah, that was a cheap shot.
That was mean.
So can I tell you guys a little something about hindsight with Bloodsport and Kickboxer, since these are nights? All right, so I'm looking back at his movies now, and when I was a kid, dude, I thought like Bloodsport and like Kickboxer, what's that guy's name? Tung Po, when he was kicking the block before the fight with Jean-Claude Van Damme's brother. I thought he was like the baddest dude ever. Bolo Young and his peck bouncing. I mean, I thought these were like the hardest core baddest dudes on the planet. But I watched the films now at 33, and I realized that the fighting in these movies is terrible. Like, there's no blocking. There's no, like, game planning. Like, Tung Pao, he's really not that tough in Kickboxer. Like, so Jean-Claude Van Damme is, like, supposed to take a dive in Kickboxer. So he takes a beating, and then when he finally turns it around, the dude has no idea how to, like, fight. And he just starts throwing wild Bane punches. And he's just throwing – he's, like, getting in his butt. Like, so he's really not that tough. And then, like, Bolo Young in Bloodsport, like, he just straight up cheats, right? He throws that powder from his pants in Jean-Claude Van Damme's eyes. And then Van Damme literally sits there for 2 minutes, just going, and then Bolo Young just sits there watching him. And it's like, yo, punch him in the face right now. Like, these guys, I don't know. I guess, you know, I know it's more about his training and the spin kicks and stuff like that. And there are some really kind of cool moments. But the fighting in these movies is not proficient at all.
Well, hold on, huh? There's one particular fight between both of those movies. Oh, by the way, guys, both those movies, 1988 for you young listeners. Do watch them. Just watch them with beer. You'll have fun. But so 1988, when Van Damme is fighting the nondescript martial artist who's probably doing Taekwondo or something in Bloodsport. The guy's wearing like an off grayish gi. Actually, it might have been Kung Fu. I don't know. But he was fighting this guy. There's nothing special about him. but they have a kick battle, kind of. Not like the Thai strength contest, but the bad guy throws a kick, and Van Damme blocks his kick with a kick. Like, he kicks down his opponent's kicking leg. And then at the same time, they both do a jump spin kick, and neither of them make contact. And then after that, at the same time, they both do another jump kick, and Van Damme makes contact. But it was like a battle where after that block, Van Damme was just a little farther ahead in his techniques, where by the second follow-up technique, he had the leg up on the guy, literally the leg up. But so, I mean, that was actually, like, technically one of the more interesting scenes in a Van Damme fight.
So, yeah, I'll give it that, and I'll give it the bar fight in Kickboxer, because there's a scene in Kickboxer, like I said, in that bar fight, where he kicks a guy. I think he killed him. So,
but with his wind-up, I mean, come on.
I'm like, I saw that, and I'm like, that guy's dead.
He was like, I want to see the deleted scene. I want to see what happens.
That guy's dead.
I'm like, get up, guy. Please get up.
Like, he's
dead. I feel like he killed him. But, like, you know, in Bloodsport, I think there was 5 splits during the training, on the rock, in the room. When he punches a sumo, and then when he gets dragged, but so there's like 6 splits in there, and then Kickboxer, you know, it's all about him splitting up and his training and everything. So, I mean, I like it. I think he was the underdog, and I think he built himself up to win. And I think that the idea of Bloodsport was really cool. You know, I think that there were memorable bad guys. And so, I mean, it was a great kickoff. Well, gosh, it was a great kickoff to his career.
Get a leg up on that kickoff.
And to be fair, guys, I was watching the fight again in Kickboxer, and it's like one long butt shot of JCVD. Like, he's wearing that, like, he's wearing that, like, skirt, and every time he gets kicked, he falls on his back and it flaps up, and you're sitting there going, what? Like, what's going on? Have you noticed that?
True. Like, why is it like G-stringing up his butt?
Yeah. And like,
it's that silk underwear. Happens. It's so unpredictable.
Yeah, and like, people are gonna be like, how'd you notice? Like, dude, it's right in front of your face. So you're sitting there and you're like, oh, come on, JCVD. Like, after like the 8th time, you're like, they did this on purpose. They set up his
I could count his butt hairs, all 0 of them.
So it's like, I think they actually planned that. And so you're sitting there going, oh, brother. Like, I don't remember that when I was young, but I'm watching it now and I'm like, oh, come on, guys. You know, like, and then I'm watching that, you know, in Kickboxer, the end fight. Like, that guy really wasn't that tough. So,
you know, Mark,
he had huge pecs.
Yeah. Mark, I think you brought up a really good point earlier when you said, like, you know, watching the fight scenes, you know, as we're older now, it doesn't seem as good. And I totally agree, because I think the fighting, especially early in Van Damme's career, like, they're not really meant for, like, people who have like a technical knowledge of actual martial arts. It's a very entertainment focused type of martial arts. And I think that's what Van Damme does well. Like,
that wasn't really the reason behind it, though.
No, but I think you're right. I think, all right, so
his moves are very flamboyant.
Yeah, you're right. Because remember that scene in Bloodsport where that guy's looking at him and he's like cracking his knuckles and he has his hands up in like the Muay Thai stance?
Yeah.
And JCVD just spin kicks him into oblivion? Like, you know, I forget most movies I watch. You really do, because you can't absorb that much. But there are kicks and moments from Kickboxer. Well, not so much Kickboxer, but from Bloodsport that are incredibly memorable.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's
the 3 back-to-back jump spin split kicks.
Yes. And so I think you're right. I think he did capture a very cinematic fighting style.
Yeah.
And now, obviously, like, you know, Rocky and all these movies, it's really hard to be technical because people get knocked out left and right. So you do need to have the trickery of cinema. And so I do think he had a very a fighting style that translated well to cinema.
Yeah.
So
I don't know. I mean, obviously, true martial art is going to look at it and just like, oh, that's not real at all. But, like, you know, when we're little kids, like, we don't know better. We think he's, like, the greatest martial artist ever. And, you know, maybe he was back then. Who knows?
Actually, it's not just about us being kids. Back then, nobody in America knew better. Unless you were watching Hong Kong cinema, kung fu movies, there was no good fighting choreography in the 80s. There wasn't any in any American or generally European produced films. It wasn't until the 90s when they started bringing over the Hong Kong cinema choreographers that fighting actually started to become technically sound. And it's crescendoed in the last 5-10 years even. It took a long time. But if you look way back to the old Schwarzenegger movies, there were a lot of backhands from people like Schwarzenegger, because it was easy to film behind the guy throwing the backhand and fake him hitting the guy when you're really a foot away from coming into contact with the victim's face. And if you go back to the 70s,
Sonny Chiba and Bruce Lee, right? And
but not them. They were really fighting. But the American movies, like Schwarzenegger was literally picking up and throwing people when he played Hercules in New York.
Yeah.
Or like, because they had no choreography.
Or like Gene Hackman in French Connection. Like, he was just sort of chasing people. Or like Burt Reynolds in his movies. Like or Clint Eastwood in Every Which Way But Loose. It was just like a lot of boxing. There wasn't too much maybe we're wrong. People are probably yelling at the screen right now. But I think it was a new type of fighting style. You know, MMA wasn't big at the time in 88. So, it was a variation of like more, I don't know. I think it was cool. It was different and it was exotic. And I think that's why people loved it.
Yeah. Especially if you compare, now this is going to sound like sacrilege, but like when you compare something like Bloodsport or Kickboxer to like kind of like the Bruce Lee era style of martial arts, like it was just like Jean-Claude Van Damme's style of fighting just seemed a little bit more exciting. It just seemed a little bit more, you know, in your face, more action packed. You know, not to say he's better than Bruce Lee. That's not the case. And Bruce Lee was a very technical fighter. You know, he had that.
I mean, Van Damme was like the bubblegum top 10 radio hit pop culture. Right. And then Bruce Lee was like
Animal Collective or Wilco.
There you go.
Yeah. And Bruce Lee is like Beethoven, right? So.
Yeah, exactly. Bruce, yeah. So, I mean, like Enter the Dragon and like a lot of those fights, you know, against like what, Chuck Norris and his classic brawls.
Yeah.
No, I know. Yeah. And then, he was the pop 40, the top 40 hits, Jean-Claude Van Damme of action.
Yeah, he
cinema.
Was like bubblegum pop of Mark, because he was pretty and he had the longest.
He was the Taylor Swift of his day.
Somebody.
He was the Taylor Swift of his day.
Yeah. That's right. No way, man. She's gonna be around for a long time.
In those two movies, scene that really stuck out for me, and that was the chase scene in Bloodsport, where he's being chased by Forrest Whitaker, who, by the way, is in the whole movie of Bloodsport, guys, a young Forrest Whitaker. But he's being chased by him and this other older FBI agent through the streets, and it's this long chase scene where Van Damme's just playing with them because he's in good shape, and they're playing the song Don't Steal the Night. And it's like, don't steal the night, don't steal the night. And so I love that scene. That scene stuck out so much to me with that music and him playing around. I was an undergrad in the early 2000s. My cousin Ryan, who we've mentioned a lot on our podcast, he was in my living room flipping through the stations. I had like all the movie channels. I was in the bedroom in the other room and I couldn't see the TV. And he flipped to a station and I just heard, don't steal the night. And I yelled, oh, what's that? Is that Bloodsport? And Ryan just said, oh my God. He couldn't believe that I knew what movie it was just from those 3 seconds. But so that stood out to me. Like that's one of my favorite scenes in that movie. It doesn't even have a fight.
Yeah, and like, I don't know. So this is kind of like Ebert. I know I keep bringing him up a lot, but I think Ebert's a genius. And he wrote this about as we're going to get onto Jean-Claude Van Damme's career. And I think it's really, I think he kind of called it. He wrote, because the martial art genre has had so much success recently, its stars are condemned to play only leading men. Van Damme and Seagal are always at the center of their plots. That will hurt their careers in the long run, since martial arts movies are limited by their formulas and the heroes are supplied with almost ritualistic plot patterns. Since Seagal seems to have more talent than any of his movies have been able to use, and Van Damme also has possibilities, it's too bad the marketplace won't let them play supporting roles in more ambitious movies. And I mean, like, I think that's totally true. Like, if you look at Jason Statham in Snatch, Lock, Stock, and a recent Spy, he's amazing as a supporting character. But he got pigeonholed by Transporter, and he's made a ton of bad, like, Transporter-esque films. And I think Jean-Claude Van Damme got stuck as, like, a leading man who's basically, like, almost the same character. Like, the tortured underachiever, the guy who's forced into a tournament, the guy who's, you know, he's a good guy, but he's brought back as, like, a cyborg. He has to help a family. He has to help a woman. In Time Cop, he has his wife that's killed. In Sudden Death, he has to save his daughter. In The Quest, he does another Bloodsport film. and so, like, you know, it's like, you know, it's always the same variation of his films. And so I almost wonder if,
you know, I didn't really do that back during the 80s and 90s, but, you know, I wonder if that he did get pigeonholed and that really did hurt his career.
Well, I think that's kind of the choice he made, right? When he, I mean, you don't just like out of nowhere, like, oh, get chosen to be in a martial arts movie. Like, you had to have like prior training. And like, I think he chose his career path that he wanted. I think he knew what he was getting into.
In defense of this, I won't call it a criticism, but in defense of this thesis of Roger Ebert's, if your first big movie is Bloodsport, no director is watching that thinking, I want him in this romantic comedy that I've set up.
Mm. Yeah.
No one is thinking, I'm doing a modern version of Annie Hall and I want him as the Woody Allen's best friend character. No one's looking at this movie thinking that. When you do one of these fighting movies, that's the thing about doing action movies is that when you do action movies, people tend to only think about you in other action movies.
He might have been good in Joe versus Volcano.
Oh, yeah.
He was,
or Sophie's Choice 2.
Sophie's Choice Part 2, The Revenge.
This time she doesn't get a choice.
But you could see later on that he wanted to flex his like acting chops by playing two different kind of characters, like the villain and the hero, and then he has to save families, or he's like a cyborg. So he's a cyborg in Universal Soldier.
Let's move on to Cyborg. Yeah, actually, that's 1989.
So can I drop some knowledge on you guys?
Drop some knowledge. Educate.
Ouch.
So Cyborg was ouch.
Don't. Yeah, drop it on my head.
So Cyborg was originally supposed to be a sequel to Masters of the Universe and was supposed to be the starting off for a Spider-Man film. Now, both of those films fell through, but they already had the costumes and everything. So the writer locked himself in a room for a weekend and wrote Cyborg. Dolph Lundgren didn't want it, so they offered it to Van Damme, who I think this was be made before he made Kickboxer. And so this was originally supposed to be like a rock opera type film, because all the characters in it are named like the characters' names are Gibson Rickenbacker, Fender Tremolo, Marshall Stratt, and those are all names of guitars. So it's supposed to be like this guitar-heavy rock opera about this bad guy who was like a god figure who wanted to make sure that the cyborg didn't turn on electricity. It wasn't about like a plague or anything. So like the crucifixion scene in Cyborg makes sense because he actually was like a zealot who didn't like the electricity. But then it became nothing of the sort and became Cyborg.
I did not know that, by the way.
Yeah.
So I love Cyborg. And in fact, I don't necessarily think that nowadays, but back when I was a teenager, after I had seen about a dozen Van Damme movies, Cyborg was by far and away my favorite Van Damme movie for a long, long time. Up until The Quest came out, actually.
Yeah.
Because the Quest had some badass fights.
I mean, I love Cyborg as a kid. I remember I had the VHS and I watch it. But I know I keep saying this, and I guess this is like for all these movies, but I watched it again recently and I was like, ugh. Like, I don't know. It's just, I don't know. I was just like, what is happening? Like, there's a scene where this family's dying and this little girl has to hold on to a barbed wire thing and her hands are getting torn to shreds while her parents drown in a well. And then like, I don't know. It's just it's a weird, weird, weird movie for me. But as a kid, dude, I rocked that VHS nonstop.
So do you think this is a step down from his previous year when he had Bloodsport and Kickboxer?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't know, because this was really different for me, you know? Like, it's like Kickboxer was his kickboxing Rocky. Bloodsport was his Kumite movie. And Cyborg was his actual loner action star movie. That Cyborg was the first movie where he was really an action star.
It was like his Terminator, where like instead of Michael Biehn protecting Sarah Connor from Arnold, he was protecting the cyborg from what was the guy's name?
Fender.
Yeah, Fender. Fender Tremolo. And then there was Marshall Stratt, of course. But like, I don't know, he had those weird 90s glasses on. The bad guy, and it just, I remember I originally like thought the scene where he did the splits and stabbed the guy through the chest was like amazing, and
oh, it was like, so cool. Yeah, I mean, like he was above him.
I mean, to be fair, like, this sounds bad, right? So this is one of those movies I wish I hadn't watched again, and I just had the cool memories in my head. Does that make sense? Like, because
yeah, I mean, I check my brain at the door. I turn myself into a 12-year-old when I watch those again.
Jam a Q-tip like really deep, and like that'll take care of the problem.
The synapses firing all wrong. Yeah.
It's like, oh, I never saw that movie.
I mean, like, I don't know. You know, what do you think, Lazavath? Did you like Cyborg?
No, I watched it once. No. I watched it once. It was on TV like years ago. I'm just like, well, I'm never going to watch this again.
Wait. So the first time you saw it was as an adult in your 20s?
No. It was in my teens. It was playing on TV. It was heavily edited. Okay. But, yeah, I just remember thinking this is not one of his better movies.
God, I loved it. Well, and there was a scene where he's walking down the street and he's like fighting one of the land pirates, and you see the next one coming up. So he's got to finish off this one land pirate with like an elbow, and then he's fighting the next land pirate, and then there's two of them for a second. I love it. I love it.
Oh, I like the name land pirate.
I don't know if they ever called them that in the movie. That's just what I'm.
Honestly, I'm not making it
funny. I just like that name.
Yeah.
They look like land pirates.
I probably would have enjoyed it if I saw it with you, Living Good, instead of just like by myself. Like.
Movies are more fun with someone else.
Yeah.
I think you're right. But I mean, I like the whole post-apocalyptic thing. You know, like, I don't know. I liked, you know, I guess there are some good spin kicks. So yeah, it's not my favorite Van Damme movie, but it's kind of a bummer too. Cause it was one of those movies where I feel like a year ago I would have told everyone how great it was. But then I watched it again. I was like, uh-oh.
Oh no. No, so, what have I done?
I mean, to move to 1990, and you can come back to Cyborg if you have something else about it, but Lionheart is the first of Van Damme's movies that I regret.
Really?
Like, it wasn't exactly a Kumite movie, but it was, you know, it was an organized fighting arena where he fought all these guys. The fights got progressively harder because they're upping the stakes until he fights, like, the big bad guy, Attila. What a name to Attila. Yeah. But and that movie, like when I look back at that, almost all the bad guys are lame. And the one bad guy who isn't totally lame is put in a lame outfit in a lame setting. And that's the swimming pool guy with the long hair, because I thought of Point Break the whole time, like the surfers. But he's fighting the guy in a swimming pool and it comes down to a drowning scene or something. It was horrible. But like the whole movie Lionheart, I regret. I mean, that's got to be a drinking game for me to watch it now.
I like the entrance of the pool guy. Like, Van Damme's in the pool in his onesie. And
he's like, what's going on?
Yeah, and then they cut up on some hill, right? And there's just some guy in another onesie who looks like Tommy Wiseau from The Room on steroids.
He looks like he was just birthed from nature. Like he rose from the mountains.
But he's just, like, standing up in the trees, and then he runs down. And then, like, it's just a bunch of spin kicks. And then Van Damme starts throwing kicks while in pretty deep water. I'm like, this doesn't work like that. And then, you know, of course, the first fight where there's the big nut shot. And then there's like the lady that's bad that tried to seduce him. And then he has the sidekick and he just wants to make money for his family. But I felt like, I remember watching it going like, this is Bloodsport, but not Bloodsport.
This is like lame sport.
Oh, oh man. Let me get you on a roll tonight.
You know, and you know what else was it? So this is 1990. What else was in 1990 was Death Warrant, which I also really don't like anymore. I mean, I love it in a way. Like, I'll stop. If I'm flipping through the stations and it's on USA or TBS, I'll watch it for 10 or 15 minutes. This might happen once a year, wherever it is in the movie. But the bad guy, like, he's not a fighter. He's just some dude who, for some reason, like, doesn't die. Almost by, like, the statistical anomaly that whenever you shoot him or stab him, you're missing an organ. Like, he just keeps not dying. And they call him the Sandman because he puts you to sleep by murdering you. Like, that whole movie was we got introduced to, like, toilet wine, like, because he's undercover in a prison. It was it didn't work for me. It's like they were trying to do Tango and Cash, and they took out all the fun, and then they gave you a lame bad guy.
I just want a scene where it's two prisoners sitting next to each other and like, who's that? That's Sandman. He makes you go to sleep because he kills you. Oh. It's like, I get it. Like, the guy next to him goes, I understand.
It's a good street name.
I like how the guy breaks it down like he's called the Sandman. Because he kills you by killing you.
send that guy a solo cup of toilet wine on me.
No, like this game's not weird. And you know, Van Damme, he knows multiple languages. I'm sure that he's a very intelligent man, but they did not do him favors in this film. I mean, he's bilingual, you know, that's more than what I can say. But like in this film, like I feel like whenever somebody says something to her, there's like a pause in his head and you hear like a beep boop beep boop beep boop beep boop. And then he replies. But like his head turns and like it's a very robotic performance. And like even more so, like in Bloodsport and Kickboxer, I felt like he was very, you know, sometimes haunted and vulnerable and like out there, and like I felt like he was good in those films and in his element. But then these, like, you know, this the scenes where he's like trying to like in a suit talk about like, you know, talking to other suits, like his reactions to everything was just like super soft. Like it was a pause before everything. Like he kind of phonetically learned his lines. And I don't know. I guess I recently watched this again too on Netflix for to learn more. And guys, don't think we're hating on Van Damme. Like I love this guy. I mean, this is what we grew up, but this is not a good movie.
You know, I say I regret it, but if like we were all in the same room and you're like, dude, do you want to watch Lionheart? I'd be like, yeah, I want to watch Lionheart, as long as there's beer. Is there beer? Okay, then yes.
Yeah.
It's like, why is Lionheart on?
Yeah, these are not alone movies, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't marathon these on a sick day. No.
That's what I did. I was watching this when I was sick last week.
Oh, man.
I couldn't do anything, and I couldn't really focus, so I'm like, I guess I'll just get ready for the pod.
Did you just spin kick your way out of sickness?
Oh, no.
Like, I'll just spin it out of me.
I'm going to spin kick us into 1991 for Double Impact.
Oh, my spin kicks are, there you go. I'm good.
Oh, Double Impact.
There you go.
So Double Impact for me, 1991, that was, like I said, like in my opinion, Cyborg was his first real action star movie. I feel like Double Impact was his first more mainstream action star movie. Like, Cyborg was weird. That was a weird, dark movie. Whereas Double Impact, it was a little more fun. He was playing this one kind of foo-foo kind of guy. And then he's also playing his own twin, who's, like, the opposite. He's all mean and tough and born on the streets. And he has, like, a Cinemax softcore porn sex scene in it. And he fights himself. He fights Bolo Young again. And Bolo Young looks scary as hell with a whited out dead eye. Like this movie for me was so much fun. And they added a female bodybuilder as one of the bad guys. That was kind of weird, but it was an interesting little addition. And he fought like a guy who was like a Spanish flamenco dancer doing spin kicks. Like this movie was like mixing it up a lot. This was almost like his Running Man, but not dark, because all the bad guys were weird.
I do want to say the name of his characters in this movie. He played Alex and Chad Wagner.
Don't mess with the Wagners.
I want to hear him. Hearing him say Wagner has got to be like hearing Schwarzenegger say California.
And like, you know, one packs a punch, one packs a piece.
California.
California, together they deliver a double impact. But, I mean, you know, whatever. I bet you he just wanted to show some acting chops. Like, he wanted to play something different. And so he did.
Yeah. Hey guys, I could play the twin of this character.
Like, he gets his butt kicked a lot in this movie, and he does it credibly. And I don't know. I thought it was cool. He, like, Bolo Young throws an oil drum at him. And so Van Damme, and like this theatrically brilliant, like trailer scene moment, he throws up a kick. He kicks almost vertically up in the air, and he kicks the oil drum, right? Well, if you stop right there, it's like the most badass thing ever. But then right after he does it, he's like, ah, shit, my leg. Like he messed up his knee. And then he's limping. Like in hindsight, he's like, why didn't I just duck?
All right, that movie gets a passing grade from me just for that.
Meanwhile, like Bolo Young has more lines on each of his pecs, like when he flexes, than an Escher drawing.
Like, it's like, where do his pecs end? Where do they start? I can't tell.
Yeah, not too many people hurt themselves by kicking barrels, so you got to respect that.
Like, yeah, he did an unreasonable thing, and he got what he deserved for it. He hurt his leg.
Now, he did something right, though, because that led to Universal Soldier.
Oh, yeah, 1992. Beautiful movie.
Dude.
And we bring in the Dolph.
Dude, Dolph Lundgren wearing a necklace of ears.
That's
spouting gibberish in Vietnam is the greatest thing in the history of the world.
I think that Van Damme pushing a car 30 miles an hour is pretty sweet, too. Like the girl just looks at the speedometer as he's pushing the car. He's like, yeah, I'll push it, whatever. And he's not even thinking about it. He's just going for a jog. And he's, like, pushing it faster than anyone on the planet can run.
But it's just like – and it actually led to – well, not the sequel, but the Universal Soldier led to two great Universal Soldier movies, but, you know, not in his first 10 years. But, I mean, dude, I loved it. Like, it was what, Roland Emmerich before his, like, 2012 days and Dean Devlin before Independence Day and Godzilla. So it had, like, guys that were very good at blowing stuff up. And it was just, like, a bunch of cyborgs just beating the living daylights out of each other. And they had to stay cold. So you have, you know, Jean-Claude Van Damme chilling out in the, you know, in the ice cubes trying to learn who he is. Actually, that movie showed a little bit of, you know, vulnerability because he was trying to, like, you know, learn, I guess. Like, that woman was trying to teach him.
Well, yeah, and then he got humanized. Just he got humanized in a way, weakened him, and then in the other way, strengthened him. And it was – but, you know, what I liked about it is, like – and so Double Impact, it was the first time he had, like, a real opponent with a personality, but it was himself playing it, sort of. Like, because he was battling with himself, his twin. Whereas in this one, we have a recognizable bad guy. We have a bad guy that we have seen before. We saw this guy in a bunch of movies, and it's Dolph Lundgren. So this is the first movie where he has an opposition that isn't some nobody.
Yeah, like, I think this is the first movie where it's like Jean-Claude Van Damme and Dolph Lundgren.
Yeah, like, yeah, because no one knew Bolo Young in America when Bloodsport came out.
But like, imagine that, though. Like, you know, they're talking about Double Impact, and they're like, Jean-Claude Van Damme, Bolo Young. And everyone's like, what?
Like 0.1% of the people are like, oh, yep, Enter the Dragon, head nod.
Aside from some, like, fanboys losing their heads going, Bolo Young!
They're wearing, like, a shirt that says Bolo.
The internet back then. It's not like people were like, oh, yeah, he's the Chinese bodybuilder who got into martial arts and did a couple movies with Bruce Lee. No. No, you're not Googling shit, buddy. You don't know who he is either.
I like, you know, everything about this movie. You know, during the screening for this, I think it was at Cannes, Jean-Claude Van Damme and Dolph Lundgren got into a pushing match. So, like, you know, like, they were probably fighting for screen time.
Is that like a real fight or is it staged?
They're saying it was staged, but I still love the idea of it.
Well, because if Van Damme pushes Lundgren, Van Damme moves back. And if Lundgren pushes Van Damme goes as far as Lundgren wants him to.
Yeah. And like, and I don't know, but I like Universal Soldier. I think it holds up. I think I still have the movie. Like, I don't know, it's a good TNT film.
You know, and after this movie, almost all of his movies became like Van Damme and so-and-so. I mean, not necessarily as the bad guy, but he'd have someone else, even if it was like his romance interest. Like, I can't remember if it was Nowhere to Run or Hard Target, but one of those had Rosanna Arquette, who got big and Desperately Seeking Susan like a decade earlier, so she was already a name.
Yeah.
But like, so 1993, you have those two, Nowhere to Run and Hard Target. That's when he started his mullet phase.
And Allie Walker was in, she was in Universal Soldier, and she had a pretty big name by then. So, he's starting to get – you're right. I think he's starting to move into, like, the upper leagues because, like, Hard Target, which was 93, he had, you know, Lance Hendrickson and, you know, a bunch of bigger names that he was – like Uncle Ben from the Quaker Oats commercials.
and the other thing is that, like, these movies – even now, sadly, I'm not – Nowhere to Run and Hard Target exist now to me is like – a bad movie Tuesday kind of thing. Like, that's what you have them for. They're to giggle at and enjoy. But they had real budgets. Like, Universal Soldier 2, that kind of crested Van Damme into real budgets. And so now all of a sudden, in 1993, we're seeing a Van Damme we've never seen before, regardless of the quality of the movie, because now he's running in slow motion away from explosions. And now he's riding motorcycles into the sunset. Now he's doing all those cool things that cool, edgy characters do that he was never doing before.
And now John Woo of Killers and Hard Boiled made his American language debut with Jean-Claude Van Damme. So, like, this is a big film. Like, action people were ready for this. And this legend of cinema, action cinema, is now taking Jean-Claude Van Damme to be his star in his debut American film. So, yeah.
Wait. So but yeah, so yeah, that brings up the same point too, though. Yeah, so this is him. This is him becoming mainstreamed as an action star in terms of the kind of action roles he's getting.
But the problem was, Hard Target wasn't good.
No, it wasn't. And,
You know what? Jean-Claude Van Damme had to say. He said, "John Woo made me look like a samurai with greasy hair." And like, his hair in Hard Target is really greasy, and like. I know we're talking about this, but there's a scene, you know, but Hard Target, though, like, you know, I really liked Arnold Vosloo and Lance Henriksen as the bad guys. I thought they actually had really good chemistry. I liked the plot of the film. I liked, when I was 11 and watching it, I loved it. But yeah, you're right. It is a bad movie, too. I think I wrote a bad movie Tuesday about it.
And then we go into 1994. He's keeping the mini button in 1994, making a less bad. This is kind of like a good kind of bad action movie, Time Cop.
Yeah.
There is one scene in Time Cop. There are two scenes. The one that we're all thinking of is when he jumps and does the split over the washer dryer when someone's trying to kill him, I think.
As you do.
Yeah.
We've all got to think of that. But for me, the scene I like the most in this movie is before he's in the future, before he's time jumping, he's in the mall. And some purse snatcher steals a purse and is running away with this woman's purse, or rollerblading away on this with this woman's purse. And the guy stops because when he looks forward after looking over his shoulder, he's got boot treads in his face. And he goes to a dead stop. And Van Damme is holding a foot, like a head-level sidekick, perfectly still in front of the guy's face while they have a conversation. Do you remember this? And like, the leg strength is really there. Like that, Van Damme's got that butt. That's why they were showing it to us in Kickboxer all the time in that final fight. Like Van Damme, he looks at the guy, he says, "Read it." And he reads the boot tread and it says Wolverine because it's the boot brand. And he says, "Between the lines," with his little like head twitch. And the guy says, "I should get the hell out of here." He just skates back, I think, and gives her the purse. So there were a couple cute scenes in this, and it was one of those movies where they're explaining, like, that if you travel in time, you can't come in contact with your past self because of this whole time-space continuum, whatever, you'll cease to exist. The bad guy, I can't remember his name, but he was in The Arrival.
Lance Hendry. Oh, no, wait, I'm looking at Hard Target.
He looks a tiny bit like Andy Garcia. Like an older, less handsome Andy Garcia.
Shots fired.
Oh.
Now, I have two memories of Time Cop. And so this was 94, and I was 12 years old. And I remember my mom dropped me off at the theater at about 10 a.m. And I walked up to the box office because I think it was summer, so they had 10 a.m. movies. And I'm 12 years old, and I walk up to the box office attendant, and I go, "One for Time Cop, please." And the guy takes my money, goes, "One for Time Cop," and gives me a smile, and I just walk inside. So this, like, older guy gave me, you know, an R-rated ticket when I was 12 years old to watch Time Cop. So I was like, this is the coolest thing that's ever happened to me in my life. And then, Bruce McGill, he was the bad guy, right?
Sounds right, yeah.
And then I also remember sitting in the theater and watching them travel back in time in, like, this massive Stargate vehicle. But then to go back to where they were, they just use their watch. And I remember going, how does that work? Like, all that work to get past, and then they just go beep boop, and then they're there.
It just worked for the film.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, it was a big budget movie. It made a lot of money. It was a popular flick. And it also got him working with Peter Hyams, who was John Hyams' son, the guy who did the recent Universal Regeneration films. So, this guy went and did this, and then he went and directed Sudden Death, which was a lot of fun. So, yeah.
I just remember Time Cop was one of the first movies I tried to rent, actually. I went to it wasn't Blockbuster, it was like a local mom-and-pop like a video rental store. I went there. I was like, oh, I asked my mom. I was like, oh, can I rent like Time Cop? Because I saw like commercials for it. I'm like, oh, it looks really cool. I ended up going, and I saw the movie, but then I looked over the next aisle, and like there's a Time Cop video game. I'm like, whoa, there's a Time Cop video game? So instead of renting the movie, I just rented the game.
How was it?
It was terrible.
This is like Sega, right?
It was for Super Nintendo, actually. And no, the game was terrible. I just, even back then as a kid, I was like, oh man, I should have just rented a movie. So that's my Time Cop memory.
you should have just gotten Street Fighter 2.
So this is like when we're getting peak VD. You know,
you mean like AIDS?
Van Damme. And so,
well, yeah, he got around, apparently.
Like, he has video games, like, he's starring in these big films, but then also the coke addiction comes. But,
right, yeah. and then you have Street Fighter based on the video game, same year, 1994.
Now, are we going to talk about that after the break, or
you know, I don't have a lot of good things to say about this movie other than poor Raul Julia. This was his last movie.
Yeah.
Listen, Van Damme got paid a lot of money to do it, and I don't blame him for cashing it in.
There's a great article about this, and after the break, I'll fill you in, I'll let you know where that's at. But it chronicles like the making of this film, and like this is like, you know, on that movie Tropic Thunder, how they were like 2 months behind budget on their first, or 2 months behind schedule on their first day of shooting. Like this movie, this happened to that, and it had all these problems, and like they were like in Thailand, but the crew was getting into too much trouble, so they had to go to Australia, and like Van Damme was having an affair with Kylie Minogue, you know, while they were both married. And, like, everyone was just getting into trouble, and, like, they had no idea what they're doing because, like, you know, Van Damme was gone or Raul Julia was too sick. So they just had to, like, film all these fight scenes at the last minute, and it was just plagued by, you know, problems. But I'm still amazed that I like the idea. This is going to sound weird. I don't think it's a good movie, but if it's on, I'll watch it. Like, I have fun with it. But I don't think it is good by any measure. But for some reason, it's, like, a very good it's a fun popcorn film.
Yeah. Now, just like Time Cop, obviously Street Fighter also had a video game. But what a lot of people don't remember is that they made a video game that was based off the movie that was based off the video game. So you actually had Jean-Claude Van Damme's likeness in the video game, actually, like, you know, doing, like, flash kicks and all that.
And So, like, it was called Street Fighter, the movie, the game?
Yeah, I think that's how it went. Because that they wanted to differentiate it from the actual game that the movie is based on. Like, no, this is a game that's based on the movie that's based on the game.
Well, like, Street Fighter 2 was already out. Yeah. So they couldn't just call the game this game Street Fighter if it was based on it.
Yeah, the game was terrible. It's another...
it's Street Fighter, the movie, the game.
So I'm reading a thing about it right now, and it says, wow, this is a new level of suck. I thought the movie was bad. This is 10 times worse.
Yeah, it was.
So in 1 year, he had two video games out from his movies,
and they were both terrible.
That's whatever, man. He's still winning at that point. That's pretty good.
Yeah. So winning. This Charlie Sheen's winning.
That's right. It is like a Charlie Sheen winning.
This led to 95 with Sudden Death, which I think is like it's like a Die Hard in a hockey arena, and it was funded by like the Pittsburgh Penguins owner, I believe, because his wife wanted to have a movie, but. This movie, I think, is more fun than people give it credit for. But there's also a fight that I love where it's between Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Oh, I know what you're going to say.
And a mascot. There's a woman inside the mascot. And they fight in this kitchen. And every aspect of the kitchen is used. The fryers, the ovens, the spatulas, the bread, the lamb chops. Like, anything, the mallets, anything that can be used as a weapon, they use. And then she ends up getting smushed. And some food processor or something like that.
Doesn't she come at him in the mascot suit with a big cleaver?
Yeah. he's like punching the face and like doing all that. And there's this like massive 3-minute fight scene inside a kitchen that's really well choreographed. And it's him fighting a female mascot.
Oh, by the way, I think this is the first movie. I'm very serious. I think it's the first movie where Van Damme ever does a kip up. Which is when you're laying on your back on the ground, you put your feet, your legs, like, above your chest while you're still laying your back on the ground, and then you kick your legs in the air and then land on your feet.
So it's like what The Rock does, where he just kind of like, you know, The Rock's kind of doing that move now.
Right. Yeah. He. But the thing is that The Rock doesn't actually do it.
Oh.
Yeah. He just. Whereas, I think he has like a crane help him.
but that was the first time that Van Damme did that. That was like, I mean, it's not a super fancy stunt. It's probably something that he was always able to do. But that was the first movie where he actually did that. And nowadays you see everybody do it in their fights if they're a martial artsy character. Scott Adkins will do it in the middle of that. Jackie Chan was doing it in the middle of his fights in the early 90s.
Yeah.
This was a really run-of-the-mill thing for really advanced choreography, but that was Van Damme kind of cresting in too.
Yeah, he's like, hey guys, I can do this. Yeah, but no, I mean, Sudden Death is a lot of fun. I know if it's on like Netflix or something, put it on. It's good background. You'll or YouTube the penguin fight.
Oh then, god, that's such a great fight.
Yeah. And then that leads to The Quest, which had no good fights.
No, you hold your tongue. The Quest was like the best fighting Van Damme movie ever.
So The Quest is directed by Jean-Claude Van Damme in 96.
Dude, this is Bloodsport Part 2.
Oh, yuck. But like, it's rated PG-13, right? And I feel like there's only like 4 minutes of actual fighting.
Are you kidding me?
And then he fights the guy with a really long ponytail.
That fight alone is like 8 minutes.
Yeah. All right, but like,
what was that? Wait. So the monkey kung fu guy who also does snake kung fu, that guy was amazing. He performed some of the most amazing unassisted stunts in tandem without any cuts that I've ever seen until we started getting like Scott Adkins movies coming out. Like, they have some of the most talented tandem choreography in that I've seen in a long time. And then the capoeirista, he had a pretty great opening sequence of moves. Like, I thought these fights were great.
Maybe I don't remember it that well, but I remember watching it and just being bored by it.
Yeah. I mean, the fight with the German was stupid. He was basically fighting a mean Nazi who fought like it was 1950 with fisticuffs.
Yeah, I remember that.
And the big Mongolian, he was just like, I'm tough because I'm big, like the 1950s, and he rolls around with you. The big Greek guy was cool. He was like a Greek Greco-Roman wrestling Zangief, like from Street Fighter or something. Their sumo wrestler was dumb. Sumo wrestlers suck in movies, by the way. No one can ever get them right.
Yeah, except in The Replacements.
Yeah.
That's true, yeah. He was better than both the Bloodsport and the Quest sumo wrestlers.
Are you eating eggs before a football game?
Yes, coach.
You're a crazy son of a bitch.
Why do you say that, coach? Because only a crazy son of a bitch would be eating eggs before a football game.
Whatever. I need to bulk up.
I miss Gene Hackman.
I love The Quest. The plot was incredibly stupid. You had none of the training build up. There's no real urgency behind anything. But I thought the fights were a lot more fun in this.
And like, I do want to say though, there is a scene in the sudden death fight scene with the mascot where he throws pepper in her eyes. Inside a mascot's helmet.
That's the callback to Bloodsport.
Yeah. But, yes, I don't know. But I remember The Quest. I was so excited to see it. And, like, oh, Jean-Claude Van Damme's going back to fighting. And I don't know. This did not make me too happy.
I mean, never mind. The whole, like, hour that leads up to all the fights, I was suffering. it was just Van Damme trying to act his way out of a paper bag.
And then he played a mime, right? He was a mime.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. He was a mime.
Yeah, he was like a street performing thief.
And I think he loved Charlie Chaplin. So I wonder if that's his, like, you know.
This is his ode to Charlie Chaplin.
Yeah, like his ode to Charlie Chaplin was The Quest.
That makes sense.
And then that same year, he did another, like, mainstream thing that was almost like it felt like a direct to DVD movie.
Yeah.
With Natasha Henstridge.
And it had the name Maximum Risk.
Right, and it's Natasha Henstridge, right? And it's just a couple years after she did Species.
Yeah.
And in that movie, she was a nobody. She got breast implants specifically for the role in Species. So, like, right when on. You see her cast, any teenager who sees the trailer is like, we're going to see her boobs. Let's go see that.
Yeah. I remember feeling bad for her in that movie. I don't know why, but, like, I was watching it, and they just shoehorned that scene in, you know, the scene between them in a bathroom. I'm like, oh, brother. And, like, there's so much running and, like, shooting, and everyone's missing bullets in that movie. That's the only thing I remember is no one could shoot anybody.
If I had to come up with one word to describe that movie, it would be like a fart noise.
So what would you do for Double Team in 97 with Dennis Rodman?
Oh, God, that movie was like the Buckaroo Banzai Bonkers Van Damme movie.
Yeah.
Like they're teaming up like it's a video game or something, or like a comedy where like Dennis Rodman is literally swinging Van Damme by the arms so that they have bigger reach with Van Damme's legs to kick someone in the face. And then later, like, Van Damme is fighting simultaneously Mickey Rourke and a tiger or something.
In the Coliseum. His daughter surrounded by landmines, and then Mickey Rourke adds a tiger. Like, I feel like whoever did it was just loaded up on cocaine. Like, so we got the Coliseum, then we got landmines, then we got Mickey Rourke and a tiger.
I mean, and I'm gonna say, I mean, I did love this movie. Even now, I love it for it's like the Miami Connection for a Van Damme movie.
Yeah.
Like all this crazy stuff is happening that doesn't make sense. Dennis Rodman is in it just because, and now he can fight. Watching Dennis Rodman do martial arts, by the way, is like watching a giraffe do Tai Bo. It just doesn't sit right. But it was a lot of fun, and Mickey Rourke. He just looked scary back then. That was like that was the movie when he reappeared after disappearing for 5 or 8 years doing boxing.
Yeah, and like he was actually like a Golden Glove boxer, so he was like he was actually pretty tough then.
But I mean, he was sick looking, man. I mean,
I remember watching Double Team though, and just going, "There's too much plot in this movie."
Yeah,
because it's like it's what he, so.
Well, they were trying. They were basically doing like. Almost a Mission Impossible, yeah, where so all like, these elaborate, okay, we have to do this so this will work while you're doing this simultaneously. And if we're half a second off, everyone dies. And then we have to do this and this impossible task and this impossible task. It was a whole lot of that.
Yeah. But it's like, let's see here. Counter-terrorist Jack Quinn misses his target, Stavros, on the eve of his final mission. From there, he is sent to the colony, a rebirth for presumed dead assassins. He breaks free from there and seeks the aid of Yaz, a weapons dealer, for his final battle with Stavros. There's just like, it's four different movies in one.
I love it.
just shoehorned together into a pinata of awesome.
Like this movie, I think everyone was starting to get kind of tired of Van Damme, and they sort of missed the point of how stupid and fun this movie is. Like, it's not good, but like, you couldn't, like, how did this get made? Did an episode of it, and it's really funny.
Okay. It's not good, but it's great.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. It's bad. It's good, bad.
I think my dream is for them to do a modern day remake of this starring LeBron James and Chris Pratt. Like, it would just be the exact same plot. And I just want to see like how people would react. And I get the feeling that people would like it because Chris Pratt is in it. I'm like, it's the same movie. I'm like, well, it's Chris Pratt.
I want to see it with Tyrese and Dirk Nowitzki. Like Tyrese is the main character and Dirk Nowitzki's Yaz, tattooed up, you know, drug dealer or gun smuggler. And Mickey Rourke could still be the bad guy.
Well, this I think this brings an entertaining conclusion to Van Damme's first 10 years of film.
All right. Yeah, I think that was an entertaining decade. And I think he's done a couple more things since then, but. Nothing.
Oh, he does one or two direct to DVD things a year, but yeah, some of them are actually decent. But there's so many misses.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I'm gonna go back and try to find my copy of a Street Fighter the movie, the game, the novel.
Yeah, please, the novel,
cartoon, the cartoon,
the movie.
Yeah,
let me adapt that into a movie.
Yeah, just that particular thing.
So guys, and I want to know what happened to what do you think Alex and Chad are up to nowadays?
I don't know, but I think I don't know. Let's just go to commercial break. Well,
above the target. T-minus 5 seconds till shark drop. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Drop the shark! Go! 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 This podcast is a Shark Dropper Studios production.